There is still time to get on the road, to get away for the 4th of July, but perhaps the only way to avoid traffic jams or airport madness right now is to rocket yourself into orbit or power up the intergalactic transporter.
This is Alina Kabash, and I'm from Seattle, Washington. And I wanted to be an astronaut when I was young, but sadly there were no women astronauts back then. And Mars is my choice of place that I would like to go anywhere in the universe, and that probably came from reading Strange in a Strange Land.
Ah, yes, Robert Heinlein, the classics. From Rochester, New York, I'd begin a colony on the moon so that we'd have an easier launching area for deep space exploration. That sounds very intelligent. San Antonio, Texas, in the event that faster-than-light travel exists outside of the San Antonio Spurs, I guess, I'd go to the next Earth-like planet to start over and give humanity a new slate, one that does not destroy their home but preserves it. And barring that...
Anywhere in the universe, I would go home. To the Pacific Northwest, USA, where we have abundant salt and fresh water, wind, grain, mountains, deserts, volcanoes, and, of course, legal pot.
Yeah, there's no place like home, Austin, Texas. See my mom in a tiny beach town in northeast Brazil, Worcester, Massachusetts, easy, Paris for brunch. Brookline, Mass., I'd go to vacation for the same amount of time it takes to get to Mars and back. That's a good suggestion. Last word for the moment goes to our good friend, Harry.
Hi, this is Harry from New Jersey, and I'd like to do the equivalent of a glass-bottom boat tour, but for the solar system. I'd bring my camera, take pictures of all the planets, and be home in time for dinner.
Let's hope there's a top on that boat, Harry. It could be a little rough on the sort of breathing side of things. Coming up later, NASA's chief scientist talks about her passion to send a human just like Harry to Mars. A couple of weeks ago, the International Space Station made it onto the cover of the New Yorker magazine, a sly symbol of the Cold War tensions between the U.S. and Russia. There was a space-bound bicycle delivery guy there on the cover bringing Chinese food to the space station. The Chinese make perfectly good rockets these days, as well as mushu pork. It was a commentary on the seeming dearth of international cooperation in space right now. Ellen Stofan is chief scientist at NASA, who says she is laser-focused on an Earthling trip to Mars right now, and she's pretty optimistic about international cooperation, even given the challenges of taking the first big steps by 2030.
We want to make sure we can get humans safely to the surface of Mars and return them back to Earth and do that exploring of Mars that we're so interested in doing to get at that question of did life evolve on Mars, and if so, what was it like?
Now, a lot of scientists have already spent their entire scientific work lives on projects like Voyager, the Explorer projects on Mars, the Curiosity and the robot projects, for instance, and some projects that just kind of, you know, blew up on their way in either to Mars or some other planet. So scientists are used to sacrificing their entire lives for this kind of a mission. It gets a little different when you're talking about people just living on a planet. You really have to recruit people who will spend essentially much of their life in a place that's far removed from most of the other people like them.
Well, you know, we've been using the International Space Station to sort of start practicing for those eventualities, and that's why we really love the International Space Station. It's now been extended to 2024 because it's allowing us to learn how to live in another environment. We now have astronauts. We have a plan. We're going to send some astronauts up there for a full year to really start saying, how can we live in a different environment? How can we work in a different environment?
Do you think in your lifetime a human child will be born on a planet other than Earth?
I don't know. That's a great question. I certainly hope so. You know, I'm one of these people who's optimistic and I love to dream. And the thought that we're finally looking at, gosh, in the mid-2030s, we could really see that geologist, that astrobiologist walking on the surface of Mars, doing science on the surface of Mars is something I'm incredibly excited about. And I think it's actually going to happen and we're going to see it happen. It's really an amazing thing to see come about.
Why do this when we have all these problems here on Earth? I'm sure you get that question every time you leave your office.
You know, one thing I always like to remind people is we spend all this money on Earth. We don't actually ship it off into outer space. You know, we're employing great people. We're trying to solve huge technological challenges. And when we do that as a nation, as an international group, to me, it's an investment in the future that in the long run is going to benefit us economically.
Now, you mentioned the International Space Station, and on one level, that's sort of a cautionary tale. On the other level, it's kind of an interesting surprise. A lot of scientists criticize the International Space Station as way too much of a compromise and really a useless piece of junk out there in space when it was originally designed and the final sort of, parameters were set. But it's turned out to be much more useful than we thought. Did those scientists just stop grumbling or what? And then, of course, this issue with Russia has made it a little bit difficult to be cooperative in space. How much international cooperation is going to be required for a Mars trip? Two-part question there.
Well, first of all, you know, we cooperate really well with the Russians on an everyday basis up on the International Space Station. And people have even talked about, oh, this should be nominated for a Nobel Prize to show how not just Russia and the United States, but spacefaring nations from all over the world came together and put together this laboratory in space that has been returning amazing science. In my job as chief scientist of NASA, I've really gotten to delve into what we've been doing on the International Space Station and from looking at things like different phases of combustion we didn't know existed to understanding more about how cells and microbes work in zero gravity and how the human body responds is actually having us reflect on things like bone density loss and muscle wasting that affect people in old age here on Earth that we're now being able to study up on the space station. The scientific returns are just coming amazingly day after day. We're really utilizing this international asset in a great way. And I think the trip to Mars will, you know, this path of global exploration to Mars is just that. It's global. And there's something called the Global Exploration Roadmap that NASA's been working on with multiple space agencies from around the world. And to do that kind of a big challenge, you know, to actually say we're going to put humans on the surface of another planet, it really has to be an international effort. And the international community is really excited about this, and they're on board.
And some of the compromises in engineering and in sort of scientific terms are part of the lessons you learn on a project like this.
You know, as a scientist, I've worked on NASA missions my entire career, and it's always a great balance between the scientists and the engineers to come up with the most affordable solution you can to attack a problem. And to me, that's what makes NASA such a great place to work, is because you have those two communities where everybody's trying to really accomplish something with the technology we have, with the resources we have. And in general, NASA's really great at coming up with solutions to really get the job done.
You know, I've noticed how in the movie Gravity, the International Space Station suddenly got, you know, kind of a Hollywood cameo. And the space station's got much more of a profile in popular culture. Do you read The New Yorker?
I do.
Did you see that cover a couple weeks back of the International Space Station with this problems with the U.S. and Russia, and there's this bicyclist bringing Chinese food up to the space station?
I did, you know, and I must say I understood the commentary around it and behind it. But to me, when I looked at that, what I thought about was the fact that we've gotten commercial cargo up and running in the last several years, where we have Orbital and SpaceX who are now delivering cargo up to the space station on a routine basis. And so in a way, to me, I was interpreting it when I first saw the cartoon. I was interpreting that guy in the bicycle was either Orbital or SpaceX, and that our deliveries now to the space station are becoming this routine commercial thing. And then I understood I had interpreted it incorrectly and not maybe politically. But, you know, it's an amazing thing that we now have these commercial companies bringing cargo. And our next step is going towards commercial crew, where we'll actually have commercial companies taking crew up. So I expect the next cartoon to have a bus going up there or something.
I like your interpretation better. You know, SpaceX is bringing the sesame noodles.
Exactly.
Ellen Stofan, NASA chief scientist, thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them. because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.